that happen outside of the planet Earth, but once in a while something happens that reminds us how terrifying and cool space can be. Like a couple of weeks ago, when two incredible events happened on the same day.
I'm Anthony for DNews, and last night Trace talked about an asteroid that was flying by Earth today, 2012 DA14. Now, right after we reported on it, a totally different, unrelated meteor hit Chelyabinsk, Russia, causing massive damage. Just the shockwave from the meteor entering our atmosphere damaged over 3,000 buildings and shattered over 1 million square feet of glass.
One person who does think about space all the time is Phil Plait. He's an astronomer who began his career as a contractor at NASA working on the Hubble Space Telescope. Since then, he's started the Bad Astronomy blog, which ran for years on Discover Magazine, and is now on Slate.com. Phil's going to be at the University of Illinois to give a lecture about a book he wrote a couple of years ago called Death from the Skies, which is about extraterrestrial threats to life on Earth. Despite his expertise, though, even Phil was shocked when he heard about what happened in Russia.
When I first saw the footage, I was actually awake and happened to be online about 10:30 at night in Mountain Time, and I thought the first videos were faked. My first thought was, why are there so many dashboard cameras?
Really?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, but it turns out that's a Russian thing because of insurance fraud. So there are tons of dashboard cameras, and they caught this thing. And after about 15, 20 minutes, I started to realize it was real. And then the images and videos started pouring in, and of course the reactions were, people were amazed and some people were frightened. And yeah, I mean, nobody was killed as far as I know, which is nice. A lot of people were damaged by shattered glass. But the footage is so astonishing. How do you look at that and not think, wow, and then think, oh, this stuff is real. We need to be thinking about it.
Do you think that we are not worried enough about space killing us all, or are we appropriately worried about it, or what would you say?
In a way, it's both, which is funny. It's a real threat, and I wish that Congress would fund NASA better. I wish NASA would spend more time and energy on this. They are spending some. They are developing methods of detecting asteroids, for example, that could impact the Earth. There are cameras that are being built. There are plans in place. There's money being spent, actually, on research on how to stop an incoming asteroid. But it's not much money, considering the size of the threat, as we learned in Russia. So it's a real threat. On the other hand, a lot of people exaggerate it, and they're terrified about every little thing that happens in the sky, and we don't need to do that. It needs to be balanced. You need to look at the reality of the situation and say, you know, I don't have to lie awake at night terrified about this. On the other hand, given enough time, 100 years, 20 years, whatever, one of these rocks is going to come in and possibly do some damage, so we should be thinking about it.
I mean, the thing is, it seems like space is so remote. I think especially because there have been so little advances in terms of our exploration of space. If space flight, human voyages to space, had moved at the same pace as, say, personal computing, you know, we would certainly be much, much further ahead than we are now. And because it's not, like, people tend to think of space as this remote thing that doesn't affect them at all.
That may be true. We have done a lot lately, and there have been tremendous advantages, and some of those have kept pace with computers because we use computers in our telescopes. So the technology that was put in Hubble, for example, originally was 1970s, 1980s technology, but we upgraded every few years, and now a lot of that technology is a lot better. And the missions we're launching, Curiosity to Mars, and some of these other robotic telescopes and probes, very sophisticated. But as far as manned spaceflight, putting crews, putting humans into space, that kind of technology hasn't advanced hugely in 50 years, although now we have commercial spaceflight, which is great, and hopefully that'll be the next big, I hate to use this expression, but the next big boom. For a lot of people, it's hard to see how it affects them directly, and it has. GPS in every telephone and every car, and GPS, that's from satellites. That's from learning how to go into space and figuring this stuff out. Cameras in every phone, again, those cameras are cheap in many ways because of advances in astronomical digital cameras, and we learned how to build these things faster and cheaper. There's a lot of things like that, but it's not something that you wake up in the morning and see in the newspaper, this affects you directly. When a gigantic bomb goes off over Russia, that is something that can affect you directly.
So you mentioned the asteroid that came fairly close to the Earth about the same time that that meteor exploded over Russia. How close was that asteroid compared to, say, other asteroids that have come by the Earth?
That asteroid was named 2012 DA14, and it got very close. It was only about 17,000 miles above the Earth's surface. That is the closest an asteroid that size has ever come that we've seen in advance, at least. And it was about 50 meters across, so half the size of a football field, which is big, office building size. Now, we see asteroids passing us all the time. There are a couple that are passing us this week. One's about the distance of the moon. There's one later this month that's about twice the distance of the moon. We see these quite a bit. You're talking hundreds of thousands of miles there, not tens of thousands. So DA14 came pretty close. And again, it was sort of a wake-up call. Everybody was paying attention to it when the Russian meteor came by and really kind of punctuated that whole weekend. We're getting better at finding these. It's not that there are more that are out there. It's just that we have more telescopes and better ways of observing these. So we're finding them more. The more we do this, the more we're going to see these asteroids passing us at this distance.
I feel like every time I read your blog, I read something incredible and something terrifying. And I know the other day you posted something that the headline was, "Will Mars Get Whacked by a Comet in 2014? And what it made me think of was, you know, certainly more funding would be helpful in terms of detecting asteroids coming towards the Earth, but there are lots of things we really can't control at all that might happen in the universe.
Well, absolutely. That's always been true. I mean, the universe is not out there to protect us, and there are bad things out there. We started to see this really seriously in 1994 when a comet hit Jupiter, and it was bright enough to see with telescopes on Earth. It was actually easily detected. We're seeing now that Jupiter gets hit all the time, you know, on a yearly basis probably. We don't see it every time, but it does get hit a lot. And for Mars, Mars is smaller than Earth. For that to actually have a really close passage by a comet is amazing. That might happen, it will happen in October of 2014. There's this comet that's going to pass probably within 100,000, well, certainly within 100,000 miles of Mars, maybe as close as 20 or 30,000 miles. And that means that Mars will actually be inside the cloud of gas and debris that surrounds the comet. So Mars is going to get a heck of a meteor shower. We may actually have to worry about our space probes that are orbiting Mars right now. There are three of them orbiting now and a fourth one on its way. They may get damaged by this. So this is something that's very real and you know, may cost us a lot of money because these things are expensive. And there's nothing you can do about it. You can't hide from a comet if it takes hours to pass the planet. These space probes are going to be exposed to that. The same thing would happen if a comet passed the Earth. And that's another thing we need to be concerned about is what to do if we see one of these things coming.
You had mentioned commercial spaceflight earlier as something that is potentially positive for the space industry. I mean, as an astronomer, you don't see it as kind of like dilettantes who are just taking a fancy flight to space. You think this is actually going to be productive for the space industry?
Absolutely. I think this is fantastic. For one thing, it brings down the price of getting into space, and that's good for everybody. There's competition, which tends to drive down price, but also it's innovation, new techniques, new technologies. It's still using a rocket. It's still basically burning fuel, but there are more efficient ways of doing it. And SpaceX, Elon Musk's company, may actually be able to drop the price of getting to space by a factor of 10, which is huge. And that means people will be able to go into space a lot more cheaply. Now we're talking about suborbital flights for $200,000, getting into space for a few million or tens of millions, and there are people out there who have that kind of money. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be rich people. It's not like anybody can afford this, but that's okay, because before, nobody could do it except governments, and this is opening it up even a little bit, and hopefully 10 years or sometime in the future, the door will be thrown open wider, and more people will be able to do this, and that means more interest in space exploration. It means being able to throw telescopes into space more cheaply. It's just good for everything all around. I'm all for it.
Phil Plate, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for taking all this time to talk to us.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Phil Plate is the Bad Astronomy blogger at Slate Magazine, and he's going to be giving a lecture tonight, that's Friday, March the 8th, at the University of Illinois, entitled Death from the Skies. You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on WILL.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by the Friends of WILL and by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, offering more than 3,000 certified organic products, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields on Springfield Avenue in Urbana.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 8th of March, 2013. It was on this day, 1935, Thomas Wolfe's novel of Time and the River was published. His editor was Maxwell Perkins, who got the first draft, more than 1 million words, and still growing. Perkins and Wolfe met almost every day while Perkins read through every page, red pencil in hand, slashing many of the pages from corner to corner, Wolfe arguing with these deletions, coming in with new material, which Perkins rejected. The book turned out to be 912 pages long, and Wolfe dedicated it to Perkins, and the dedication was almost 100 words long. Of Time and the River was a commercial success. It got mostly good reviews. But Thomas Wolfe was wounded by the negative ones, and he became convinced that Perkins had ruined his book. He left Perkins for a new editor 3 years later, dying of tuberculosis at the age of 37. He sent his last letter apologizing to Perkins and thanking him once again. It's the birthday of Kenneth Graham, born in Edinburgh, Scotland, 1859, raised by his grandmother in an old house in the south of England with a big attic and a garden near the River Thames and the Bisham Woods. The family had lost its fortune. Graham couldn't go to college. At the age of 19, got a job at the Bank of England. He was nostalgic for his childhood, and he collected wooden toys and stuffed animals, which filled his flat. And he wrote several books glorifying childhood, the Golden Age, Dream Days. When he was 38, still a bachelor, he met a woman named Elspeth Thompson. They married. They had a son named Alistair, who was in poor health, blind in one eye. Graham told his son bedroom stories about a character named Mr. Toad, and he wrote these stories down, collected them in a book, The Wind in the Willows. It got terrible reviews, and it became a classic. And it's the birthday of John McPhee, born Princeton, New Jersey, 1931. Journalist, written about canoes, basketball, oranges, geology, tennis, nuclear energy, the Swiss Army, and his own family tree, which he traced back to a Scotsman who moved to Ohio to become a coal miner. One of his high school English teachers required her students to write 3 compositions a week, each accompanied by a detailed outline, and McPhee